Okay, so we have packets here of a topic that unfortunately is current, and that is a very famous point at the very beginning of the parsha. Very beginning of the parsha. That's the first page here on this packet, this pasuk. The verse says that Vayira Yaakov Ma'od. Yaakov was very, very afraid. And then Vayetzer Lo. Yetzer is from the term tsar, narrow. He felt constricted. He felt bounded. He felt caught in a vise. Very, very upset about something. So Rashi, presumably addressing the question of why is he both afraid and caught, both seemingly express the same idea, that he was upset, nervous. So Rashi says, Vayira, he was afraid, Shema Yehareg. Our father Yaakov was afraid that now he's meeting up with his brother Esav. Brother Esav is not acting like a brother. He was afraid that he might get killed. Vayetzer lo, he was in narrow straits. He was afflicted. He was frustrated. According to our text of Rashi, im yaharog hu es acherim, if he would kill others. He was afraid that he might get killed, but he was very upset, very constricted, very frustrated. Maybe, heaven forbid, he might end up killing someone else. Heaven forbid he might end up killing someone else. There's a famous line about from Golda Meir, that after the Yom Kippur War, she said, I could forgive the Egyptians for killing our boys, but I can't forgive the Egyptians for turning our boys into killers. And Rashi seems to be saying something along those lines. Vayira, he was afraid that he might get killed, but he was absolutely terrified. It was a source of enormous pain and frustration that, heaven forbid, even worse, he might kill someone else. And I would question, I don't know if Golda Meir is right. If there are enemies that come to attack us, there are enemies that come to attack Jews, I don't know that we should feel bad that we kill them. Why should we feel bad? They're coming to kill us. The Rambam writes that there's a concept of milchemes mitzvah, war that is a mitzvah, that is an obligation, a sacred duty. There are two types. There's the war to liberate the land from the seven nations that occupied it when Joshua first came. And there's a war to save Jews from the enemy who will attack them, whatever enemy attacks them. It's a mitzvah. Should we be upset that we had to do a mitzvah? Should we think that a mitzvah by its definition is bad? It's a good thing. But then we have Rashi. You know, so I can disagree with Golda Meir, but I can't disagree with the Rashi. Rashi here says that Yaakov was afraid that he would kill, but he was afflicted that he might, he was afraid that he might get killed, but afflicted that he would kill. What's he afraid about? Why is he upset that he might kill others? The people coming to kill him are enemies. Enemies who attack the Jews, there's a milchemet mitzvah, a holy obligation to wage war against them. And if we don't go to so far as to call it milchama, to call it war, at the very least it would be called a rodef. We have a halachic category of a pursuer, that if there is someone who comes and he's pursuing someone, I see someone running after someone else and the fellow has a gun, he's running to kill someone, I have an obligation to save the innocent fellow, the innocent victim. I have an obligation to shoot the bandit who's running with the gun. So here Esav is coming with 400 men to kill Yaakov and his family. They're all roadfim, at the very least they're all pursuers. Why is Yaakov upset that he's going to kill them? What's wrong? He's allowed to kill them. It's not a bad thing. So this is a question that commentators have. I reproduced on the second and third pages of this packet an article from Rav Yitzchak Saratzkin, who is, used to be one the Rosh Yeshiva of Tells in Cleveland, and now he just moved a couple of months ago to Lakewood to give a shiur there. So that's where many of these sources come from. If we look further, what's that? He's the grandson of the of Rav Zalman Saratzkin, the author of Oznayim LaTorah. But if we turn past this article to the fourth page here, we have the writings of Rabbi Eliyahu Mizrahi. The fourth page here in this packet. It's page Taf Nun Vav at the top of the page. Rav Eliyahu Mizrahi was a great sage. We usually consider him a Rishon. He was from the medieval sages. And he wrote a commentary on Rashi. He discusses the concepts in the Rashi further. So this is on page Taf Nun Vav. In this edition of Rebellion Mizrahi, it's a new edition, nice block print. So he says, he quotes the Rashi, Vayetzer lo. Rashi says, Yaakov was afflicted. Yaakov was in dire straits. Shema Yaro Gacher. Maybe he would kill others. So it's from Bereshis Rabbah. It's from a Medrash. That's strange. What's wrong with killing them? They're coming to pursue. So first of all, he says, Yesh Mefarshim, there are those who explain the Rashi, Shema Yaharog et Esav. Yaakov wasn't afraid that maybe he'll kill the people coming with Esav. He was afraid that maybe he'll kill Esav. And you'll say, well, he's allowed to kill Esav if Esav's coming to kill him. Jews believe in self-defense. We're not pacifists. We believe that pacifists are either foolish or cruel, because they don't take violence seriously enough. They're denigrating the pain of the victim by being pacifists. So if Esav is coming to kill Yaakov, it's perfectly within his rights to kill Esav. But he was afraid that he might kill Esav, and then the Kalalenu Aviv. Then his father, Yitzchak, would be upset. And after all, Yitzchak thought Esav was a great guy. So if Yitzchak would hear that Yaakov had killed Esav, even if Yaakov would be legitimate in killing Esav, but if Yitzchak would then hear about it, Yitzchak would feel bad. And Yitzchak might curse Yaakov. So Yaakov was terrified. He felt that he was in dire straits, that he might kill Esav. There's a problem with this. Rashi doesn't say that Yaakov was in dire straits that he might kill Esav. Rashi says he was in dire straits that he might kill others. If it was all about Esav, shouldn't Rashi have said that? Shouldn't Rashi have said he was in dire straits that he might kill Esav, and then his father would be angry with him? That's the critique that the Maharal, Rabbi Yehuda Lowy of Prague, asked. Yeah.
He's contemplating to kill Esav, and he's worried about the klal of his father? That's a major issue?
Yeah, because killing Esav would be permitted because Esav would be a rosé.
Well, the klal of his father, he can swallow.
No, but he's afraid his father would curse him. He worked so hard for blessings, he wouldn't want to hurt his father. It would anger his father, it would hurt his father. His father would curse him. That would, even a child who is somewhat sinful, a parent always has that certain undying love for a child. So his father would be upset. That would hurt him. That's what he was afraid of. He would upset his father. He would have his father curse him. And the Revelio Mizrahi says, V'chein matzasev b'tanchuma. I found this in the Tanchuma. But the Maharal asks, it's not what Rashi says. So continuing though in what Rav Eliyahu Mizrahi wrote, Aval meharigatan shel acherim lo haya meitzar. Yaakov was not afraid of killing the 400 men who were coming with Esav. Now in the second line here of Revelio Mizrahi, Mipnei, because, quote, Shehabalach gehargecha hashkein lehargo. We have a rule. Someone comes to kill you, it's a good thing to get up and to kill him. Kedenafkalan mikra. And in fact, it's based on a verse. Torah Torah says that if im b'machteres yimatzei haganav v'huka im lo damim, if I'm living in a home and suddenly I hear noises underneath, someone has been tunneling and he's breaking into my home, and I shoot into that tunnel. So the Torah says, if I kill the fellow who's breaking in, there is no penalty for that. There's no blood for that individual. That's not murder. Why? The Gemara explains, what is the meaning of the verses? The Gemara says, people are not willing to take armed theft sitting down. Someone breaks into my home, I'm going to protest. I'm going to protest to try to protect my valuables. So this fellow who came in, who's breaking in, he knows that the owner might protest. What's he going to do if the owner protests? He comes in knowing if the owner protests, I'm going to kill the owner. He comes in planning to kill the owner. So he is a pursuer looking to kill the owner of this home. So if anyone... Yeah, that's the Gemara. The Gemara says it in Sanhedrin, right? And in Pesachim. So the fellow who's coming in is really trying to kill the owner of the home. And that's the rule, that if someone comes in trying to kill, someone is pursuing to kill, the pursued is allowed to shoot first and to kill the fellow who's coming. So that's based on a verse. So therefore, the same is true here. The same way we say there about a thief, l'fi shebaal iskei nefashos, he's coming knowing that he might end up killing. He knows that if he's caught digging in and breaking in, you, the owner of the home, are not going to be able to hold yourself back. You're going to defend your property. He is coming with this intent to get up and to kill you. The Torah says, hashkei matav hargehu. You get up first and you kill him first. You know he's coming to kill you. You should kill him first. Kedisa bebrachas beperek arov, Sanhedrin, perek ben Sora. So Rav Elia Mizrahi says that Yaakov was not afraid about killing the people coming with Esav, because all those 400 men were pursuers. They were looking to kill Yaakov, at least on some level willing to kill Yaakov, and that's already enough to render a person a pursuer. So Yaakov has no fear about killing them. He would be within his rights to kill them. Then he suggests a very interesting proposal. V'im tomar, and if you might ask, v'halo Esav gavra almahav. Esav is presumably a very strong fellow. He's like a John Gotti sort of figure. People were afraid of Esav. Afraid to say no to him. He's not going to take a no sitting down. Shema hevion bal karcham. Maybe he brought these 400 people against their will. What is he asking? He's saying, maybe if these 400 people are brought against their will, maybe they're not considered pursuers. Maybe one is only considered a pursuer if one pursues willfully. But if one is pursuing because there's a gun in his head saying, either you pursue or I'm going to kill you, the fellow's not doing it willfully, he's being forced into it, maybe then he's not a pursuer. It's a very striking idea, right?
Are you supposed to get killed if somebody tells you to kill others?
So generally we say, so Brian makes a very good point. Brian says, this isn't an out for these 400 fellows. We have a rule. Someone comes to me and says, kill somebody else or else I'll kill you. Person, I have to be willing to give up my life before I kill someone else. So these fellows should have been willing to say no. Esav, you're going to kill us, you kill us. The fact that they didn't say no, that does render them into pursuers. So that's true. There is a halacha called Yehareg Va'al Yavar, that a person has to be willing to get killed before one violates certain prohibitions. There are really three. I have to be willing to get killed before I commit murder. I have to be willing to be killed before I worship idols. And willing to be killed before I commit an act of immorality between man and woman. Does that apply to non-Jews? Esau's group were non-Jews. Would we say this idea to non-Jews too? If you look at the Rambam seems to describe all of the laws of Yehareg Val Yavor as fulfillments of Kiddush Hashem. How is one to sanctify God's name? Well, there are different levels of sanctification of God's name. If I, as a rabbi, walk into a store and I leave a generous tip to the waiter, that's one way of sanctifying God's name. It's a low level of sanctification of God's name. If I, as a rabbi, return an object that I don't really have to return because no one would know that I stole it, sort of thing, that also would be a sanctification of God's name. What's a higher level of sanctification of God's name? That a Jew is willing to give up his life before he commits adultery, idolatry, or murder. Presumably that's an obligation of Jews. We haven't heard that sanctification of God's name is an obligation upon Gentiles. V'mikdashti besoch b'nei Yisrael, the verse says, I will be sanctified in the midst of Israel. Would we apply this to Gentiles as well?
That it,
yeah, so what would you say?
So
Dr. Belazon says maybe murder is different. And that's what Rav Elyon Mizrachi says. Let's look at Rav Elyon Mizrachi. Again, the question is, maybe these 400 people who are coming with Esav, maybe Yaakov was afraid of killing them. You'll say, Yaakov shouldn't have been afraid of killing them. They're pursuers who are coming to kill Yaakov. Maybe they're not pursuers. Maybe they're being forced. They're afraid of Esav. Yesh lomar, answers Rav Elyon Mizrachi. Afilu hachi lo haya lahem lishmo alo. They still shouldn't have listened to him. Shaharei, because we know the very famous Gemara. Nimnu v'gamru ba'aliyas beit nitzah b'lud. In the city of Lud, the sages who were in the attic of Beit Nitzah, the house of Nitzah, had a vote, and they decided, this became the authoritative halacha, kol averu shabatorah, any sin in the Torah, im omrim lo le'echad avor val tarog, yavor val yiharek, any sin, and Gentiles come and they say, violate it, otherwise you'll get killed, violate it, don't get killed. They come, they say, eat pork, otherwise we'll kill you, eat the pork. They come, they say, plant kilayim, plant an admixture of seeds together that shouldn't be planted together, otherwise we'll kill you, plant the seeds and don't get killed. Chutz, with the only exceptions, avodah zarah, idol worship, gilui arayos, immorality, ushvichus damim, and murder. Kidisa b'sanhedrin b'perek ben sorer, mishmed reb yochan, mishim reb shim ben yotzada. So he actually just quotes the Gemara plainly, assuming that Gentiles also have the obligation of Yehareg Val Yavor. The Rambam is pretty clear that it's a function of Kiddush Hashem, but Dr. Belazon's point is very well taken. I think maybe the Maharal says it, if not the Rav Elyon Mizrachi. He says the Gemara derives from different sources that one has to give up one's life before one does these deeds. So for idolatry, for adultery, there are verses. But for murder, the Gemara doesn't have a verse. The Gemara has a logical claim. The Gemara says, how could a person say, I'll kill someone else to save myself? What makes your blood redder than his blood? My chazus, why do you think the dama didach, that your blood is sumak tfei, is more red? The midama didei is more red than his blood. What makes your blood more red than his blood? So even if you say that yehareg val yavor, get killed before you violate it, doesn't apply to Gentiles. But even a Gentile should accept or is bound by this statement of natural law, of logic, that it's immoral to kill someone else for myself to be saved. It's immoral to do so. My blood is no redder than his. He has as much a right to life as I. So maybe that applies to Gentiles too. That's a whole discussion. Does it apply to Gentiles? That's a big discussion in the Mishneh LeMelech. The Mishneh LeMelech was a great sage who wrote commentary to the Rambam. He says he thinks it would apply to Gentiles, but he quoted others who said it didn't apply to Gentiles. I was talking with my friend Meir Yaakov Soloveitchik, who told me that he heard from my teacher, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, many times, that this is a statement of natural law, a statement of morality. My teacher, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, felt that to go to the Vietnam War was prohibited. My father's teacher, Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, initially thought that the Vietnam War was Milchemes Mitzvah. Was a mitzvah obligation because the communists were like Amalek. They hated God and they hated religion. And to fight the communists was a sacred duty. But my teacher, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, disagreed. And he felt very strongly that the Vietnam War was an unjust war. And he felt that to go to the Vietnam War and to kill Viet Cong would be a violation of my chazus, of what makes my blood any redder than their blood. They have a right to life as much as I. And when students of Rav Aaron would ask him, they would get draft notices, he said, you'd have to avoid going to the war. And it doesn't matter if you'll be thrown in jail because it's Yehareg Val Yavar. You have to be willing to get killed before you kill Viet Cong. Yehareg Val Yavar, they have a right to life as much as you. Human beings have a right to life. In a just war, then they don't have a right to life. But it's not a just war. The United States was engaged, in his mind, in an unjust war. There's no right to go to war to kill them. So he would be willing to say, even in terms of a Jew killing a non-Jew, he would say the logic of my chazis, and definitely non-Jews amongst themselves, or Jews amongst themselves, definitely. You'd always say this logic, my chazis, what makes your blood any redder than his? And that's an absolute statement. So that should apply even to non-Jews. That's what he would argue. So one could say that. One could say that these fellows who were coming with Esav are in fact pursuers. You'll say, well, they came at the end of a barrel of a gun. The answer is they should have said, we're not coming, even if we shoot us, we're not coming, because what makes their blood any more red than Yaakov's blood? So if we say that, right, if we say that, then again, all these people are pursuers, so then Yaakov really shouldn't have been upset about killing them. So what are we going to say? Yaakov was upset that maybe he would end up killing Esav and his father would get upset. Well, the Maharal already asked on that. But that's not what he says. Rashi doesn't say Yaakov was upset that he might kill Esav. Rashi says, "Vayetzer lo shema yaharog acherim." He was afraid he might kill others. So finally, Rav Elyo Mizrachi suggests another approach. Achkasha dilma lo laharog oto nitkavnu. So he suggests that maybe these other 400 people who were coming with Esav, maybe they were never planning to kill Yaakov. Kill Yaakov? That's Esav's brother. Maybe Esav doesn't want Yaakov killed. Maybe Esav just wants to torment Yaakov. And what do they have against Yaakov? Why should they hate Yaakov? They have nothing against Yaakov. They have to do this. They're not going to pick a fight with Yaakov, a strong man, an important man. They were going to kill Yaakov's group, those who were with Yaakov. Maybe the servants that Yaakov had. Maybe some of the people that he had around him, some of his friends. But they weren't coming to kill Yaakov. So here's Yaakov. He himself may not be in danger. He sees others who are in danger, others who are being pursued. Here already we might say something as follows. We might say Yaakov would be in his rights to stop the pursuit, but not necessarily to kill the pursuers. Because we have a rule that if there's a situation of pursuit, of someone running after someone else to kill them, that we are to stop that person, we are to save the life of the fellow who's being chased, but we're supposed to do it in the way which is the least harmful. If we can do it in some way that would, you know, to shoot to wound, we have an obligation to shoot to wound. Now he's making a big step forward. He says, if I'm in a situation where I see someone chasing after someone else, I'm not in danger. The other fellow's in danger. I should save the fellow who's in danger. And I'm allowed to shoot the fellow who's chasing, but I'm supposed to shoot to wound. And if I don't shoot to wound, but I could have shot to wound, I'm a murderer. That's a big step forward. You could say, I should shoot to wound, but if I can't, I can't. I get too confused. No. Maybe a person who himself is not in danger, but who has the ability to stop the fellow running by shooting to wound, should shoot to wound, and if he doesn't, if he shoots to kill, then he's a murderer. So that was Yaakov's fear. These 400 people coming. True, they shouldn't be coming as Rotfim if they're coming to kill Yaakov. But they're not coming to kill Yaakov. They're coming to kill the people around Yaakov. So therefore, the situation is that they're pursuers. They're not endangering Yaakov himself. They're pursuers of others. So Yaakov is within his rights to stop the pursuit, but maybe not within his rights to kill them. Maybe he could have stopped the pursuit by just wounding them. But if the wounding doesn't work, then he has to kill them. So that's what he's afraid. This is what he's terrified about. This is a very difficult situation. You're under a lot of stress. You have to make a snap decision, and lives are in the balance. Maybe you're a murderer if you killed when you shouldn't have killed. Maybe you're going to cause the pursuit to get killed by not using enough force right away. It's a very difficult situation. How do you make such a decision? There's a very interesting point here. He only says this idea if these people are coming to pursue the people around Yaakov. But if they'd be pursuing Yaakov himself, then he wouldn't say, Rav Elie Mizrahi would never say, Yaakov should have shot the legs. Now then he'd be within his rights to shoot to kill. Why don't we say that if they're coming to pursue Yaakov himself also, he's in danger, he has to save himself. So he should shoot to wound, not shoot to kill. And if he shoots to kill, he's using excessive force, and he's a murderer. But he didn't say that. Rav Elie Mizrahi never suggested that. So maybe we see from this a very interesting point, and that's something that the Mishnah LeMelech says. The Mishnah LeMelech says that someone who himself is being pursued is so nervous, so frightened and scared, Halacha doesn't say, be careful how you shoot. Look, you can do whatever you want. But if somebody else is the one who's in danger, and I myself am not in danger, but I see that other person in danger, then I have an obligation to use the least amount of force possible, because then I can make an evaluation. And Halacha relies on me to make that snap evaluation and to be accurate with that evaluation. I mean, this comes up a lot for Israeli soldiers. These issues are very, very important. The rules of engagement, these are big, big questions that soldiers deal with. If children are throwing rocks at them, is that a situation of rodei? Arab children are throwing rocks at Israeli soldiers. Is that a situation where they're being pursued? Can they shoot to kill? You have a situation, or should they shoot to kill? Should you say when you see someone attacking you, do you first try to shoot to wound and only later shoot to kill? All sorts of rules. So Rav Elie Mizrahi creates an ethic. He says if the person himself is in danger, Halacha doesn't say try to figure it out because it's impossible. The soldier himself is under attack. He's in a war. He can shoot to kill. Doesn't have to try to maim. But if the soldier is not under attack, he sees someone pursuing someone else. He sees a terrorist running after someone else, but the terrorist doesn't see him. The terrorist can't see him. He's on top of a building. So then he should try first to shoot to wound. He has to make an evaluation. If shooting to wound is all it would take, if he thinks that all it would take, it'll take more, he needs to shoot to kill, then he should shoot to kill. That's Rav Elie Mizrahi's approach. When I was looking this over, I was reminded of a very famous article of Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. And that's later on in this packet. It's 6 pages further, there's a another piece from the Bar Ilan Responsa project. And that's a quote from the Rambam. Let's remember, one of the ideas that Rav Eliyahu Mizrahi suggested was that Esav's men were coerced. And this is a question. If you have a... Actually, Rochelle, it's the other side of the page. Right. No. There. Right. This is a question. If you have a situation of a pursuit, but the pursuit is coerced, do we call that pursuit? And this is the issue of abortion in Jewish law. It's a big question about abortion in Jewish law. At Shaarei Tzedek Hospital in Israel, I think that they do perform abortions. And that is based on their posek. The halachic authority for Shaarei Tzedek is Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg. Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg is the author of many, many responsa called Tzitz Eliezer. He's of the opinion that a fetus in the mother's womb, before it's born, is part of the mother. So to commit an abortion, he thinks, is not murder. It's just cutting off part of the mother. It's chavala. It's wounding oneself. A person's not allowed to lacerate oneself. We're not allowed to wound ourselves. To perform an abortion is to put oneself in a situation of chavala, of wounding oneself. So that's why he, as far as I know, he rules that if there is any sort of fetal deformity, Tay-Sachs, that's where the question first came up, he's willing to permit abortion in those situations, because basically abortion is just the prohibition of chavala, the prohibition of wounding oneself. It may be to save for the pain that's coming, to save the baby from this painful experience, to save the parents from the painful experience, one can do chavala. That was his psak. And I think that in Shaarei Tzedek, that's what they follow. They follow his guidelines. He's willing to go even later. He's willing to go even later. Rav Unterman was the one who said only during the first 40 days, I think. But Rev Waldenberg was willing to go even in the last trimester. Rev Moshe Feinstein and others were very, very upset by this. They disagreed with it vehemently. Again, my teacher, Rev Aaron Soloveitchik, was probably one of the lions in this fight to save what he felt was saving lives. He felt that a baby, after 40 days after conception, is already a life, and abortion is murder. And it's a mitzvah of saving a life to fight abortion. And my father, I'm proud to say, is a dues-paying member of the National Committee of the Right to Life. When there are politicians running that he doesn't like, so he just votes along party lines. It's the Right to Life Party. As much as he can, he even used to go to demonstrations against abortion. Because, like Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, he feels that it's a matter of saving lives. As many abortions as we can prevent or we can stop, it's lives that we're saving, literally. These are, our lives are in danger. And that comes from the Rambam. That comes from a Rambam. But the Rambam here discusses the issue of a pregnant woman whose life is endangered by the pregnancy. Would we permit abortion in such a case? So here's the Rambam. Perek Aleph, this is chapter 1, Halacha Tes, Halacha 9. Says the Rambam, Harezu mitzvas lo sa'aseh. There is a mitzvah, a prohibition. Shelo lachus al nefesh harodes. There's a mitzvah that we not we not be compassionate on an individual who's pursuing someone else? There's a mitzvah that if I see someone running after someone else to kill him, I have a mitzvah not to be compassionate. And that's really why I would disagree with, well, maybe not. But this point, when Golda Meir said she could forgive the Egyptians for killing her children, but not for turning her children into killers, we don't have to feel bad that we killed Egyptians. If they pursued us, they attacked us on Yom Kippur, we have a mitzvah not to have compassion upon those who pursue us. That's what the Rambam says. Mitzvah lo sase, shelo lachos al nefesh harodeh. There's a mitzvah not to have compassion. Maybe she wasn't referring to the fact that she has compassion for those who are killed. Maybe she's saying that the very act of killing causes a lot of pain to a person psychologically. It desensitizes a person's own value of life. That could be true. But we have no compassion for those who get killed because they tried to kill us. If they try to kill us, if they run after us, they should get killed. Then the Rambam says, Lefichach, therefore, Horu Chachamim, our sages taught, because we have a rule not to have compassion on the pursuer, our sages taught Sheha'ubra, that the pregnant woman, she Mekasha Lele, who is in the throes of a very difficult childbirth. Mutar lach tocha uber b'me'eha. One can cut up and kill the ubar, the fetus that is in her insides, bein besan, whether through some sort of potion, some sort of pill, bein biyad, or even by surgery. Mipnei shehu kerodef achareha lehorga. Because he's pursuing her to kill her. The baby who is endangering the life of the mother is a pursuer. And we are obligated not to have compassion upon the pursuer. And therefore one can kill that baby because the baby is a pursuer. That's what the Rambam said. However, v'im yishahotzi rosho, if the baby puts its head out, in other words, we, according to halacha, birth is determined either by the head coming out or by most of the body coming out. So if the baby puts its head out, if the baby is delivered in some manner, einog inbo. Even though if it will continue to thrash around and to move, it's endangering the life of the mother, at that point we cannot touch the baby. She'ein dochin nefesh mipnei nefesh. Because we're not allowed to kill one life for the sake of another life. Vizehu tivel shalom, that's the nature of the world. We can't do anything. You know, it's clear that there is recently passed legislation prohibiting in this country partial birth abortion. In partial birth abortion, as far as I know, most of the babies taken out, except for the head, and then it's killed. We would never permit that. The New York Times wrote an editorial lambasting the passage of the partial birth abortion ban, saying there's no dispensation here for when the health of the mother is endangered. According to our ethics, even if the health of the mother would be endangered, you still couldn't do a partial birth abortion. Because that would be to be docha nefesh mipnei nefesh, to kill one living being from another living being.
The question remains, if he is or death, you
go there. So Dr. Belazon asks, the Rambam is very difficult. Here the Rambam says that when the baby is a fetus, it is a rodent. When the baby comes out, then already you can't kill it because ein dochin nefesh mipnei nefesh. Ask Dr. Belazon, if it's defined as a rodent when it's inside, so when it comes outside, it's also a rodent. And the Rambam says, you're not allowed to have compassion on the rodent. You have to kill the rodent. How do we understand the Rambam? That was Rav Chaim Soloveitchik's question.
That's maybe why he had the statement that he said he also the wrong.
Yes.
Once it comes out, this is already a natural status. It's not all death anymore. It's a very difficult thing to understand, but once he's after the liver is delivered,
yes,
That's all the situation in the world. Which is
but even in the throes of pregnancy, that's natural. It's natural. It's not as if someone's doing something. It's not a conscious decision. It's nature that's endangering her in the throes of her pregnancy. And if the fetus has not come out, the Rambam says, the fetus is a rodef and one is to kill it. It's a very difficult Rambam. That's Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. That's the Rashi script here. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik asked this question. He quotes the Rambam. He doesn't understand it. He says, you know, the Rambam is based on a Gemara. He says, the real way to read the Gemara is that the Gemara is saying that the fetus is not a rodef. Because since God is doing it, that's not called rodef. The Rambam says it is called rodef. So Rav Chaim Soloveitchik says something here very, very interesting. You know, we have a rule that if I see someone pursuing someone else, I see a fellow with a gun, or I see a terrorist with a knife running into a settlement, running to pursue someone else. So we have a mitzvah, we have an obligation, to, in the language of the Gemara, to save the pursued with the life of the pursuer. To shoot the terrorist, okay, maybe it's best to shoot to wound, if I'm not in danger of Elia Mizrahi says, but to shoot the terrorist so that he doesn't get to perform his act of violence. How do we understand that? Do we understand it that I have to save a life? Because I have to save a life. I have to do whatever is possible to save a life, even if it means ending the life of a pursuer. Or do we understand it not that it's all based on my saving of a life? This fellow who's running after the other guy, this guy's a murderer. This guy deserves a punishment. He deserves a punishment, and that punishment is that he won't be able to do what he wants to do. And I'm going to stop him. And I can shoot him dead as a punishment because he's a murderer of some sort. Is the focus on his misdeed? Or is the focus on the danger of the fellow being pursued? So Rav Chaim Soloveitchik said it, he thinks it's obvious that the focus is on the fellow being pursued. The halacha that I'm allowed to kill a pursuer is that I can save a life. No matter what it takes to save a life, I can save a life. I can even shoot to kill to save the life of the fellow being pursued. What's the proof? Because I'm supposed to do it in the least damaging way. If the issue is that the fellow running is already a murderer and he deserves to be killed, why should I try to shoot to wound? The fact that halacha says ideally I should try to shoot to wound already indicates that the essence here is to save a life. But how do we understand this? How do we understand this idea that I have to save a life here? Is this the regular mitzvah of saving lives, what we always call pikuach nefesh? Or is this a new mitzvah of saving a life? A new category of Jewish law of saving lives? Saving lives in the situation of rodef. A whole new category. Maybe it's a new category. Maybe it's not the regular category of saving life because of pikuach nefesh. There's a whole long gemara in Yuma. How do we know that one has to do whatever possible to save a life of pikuach nefesh? And the Gemara ends up with a verse, v'chai b'hem. Torah says, live by these laws. Live, v'chai b'hem. V'lo sheyamus b'hem. Don't die by the laws. Says Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, and this is a novel point, says he thinks that only applies to Jews. It's a statement of mitzvah. Live by the mitzvah. The non-Jews weren't given the mitzvah. Non-Jews, says Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, are not included in the rule of pikuach nefesh. The halachic category of pikuach nefesh does not apply to non-Jews. Again, my teacher, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, his grandson disagreed. But Rav Chaim Soloveitchik felt that pikuach nefesh, that halachic category, does not apply to non-Jews. But we do find that the rule of rodef, and that the fellow pursuing should be stopped, and you could even stop him by killing him, that seems to apply to non-Jews as well. So Rav Chaim Soloveitchik said, you see from this that it's another level of saving a life. It's not the saving a life of pikuach nefesh. It's a different mitzvah, different category, a different type of law. It's in the category of rodef. And in the category of rodef, I can save a life. I have to save a life. I have to save the nirdat. Someone's being pursued. I have an obligation to save the pursued. And that's not the obligation of pikuach nefesh. It's not based on the verse of v'chai bohem. It's based on a different verse. Of Ababa Machteret, of Shofech Dam Adam Adam Damu Yishafech. It's a different verse. The whole category of law, this whole concept of rodef of a pursuer, part of it is not only that I'm allowed to kill the fellow pursuing, part of it is that I have a mitzvah to save. I have a mitzvah to save the pursued. And it's not the mitzvah of Pikuach Nefesh. It's another category. It's not the mitzvah of V'chai Bahem. It's a different mitzvah. It's a mitzvah of Hatzalat on your daf, saving the pursued. Says Rav Chaim, something unbelievable. A fetus. A baby who's in the womb, who hasn't yet been born. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik says, that baby is a life in regards to Pikuach Nefesh. That fetus that you can see in the sonogram kicking and moving, he is alive in regards to Pikuach Nefesh in terms of the mitzvah of V'chai Bahem. It's a wild idea. You know, nowadays with the wonders of medicine, they've come up with ways, I mean the doctors in the room could tell me in greater detail, of actually treating fetuses. Of care to a fetus inside the womb. Could you violate Shabbos for that? So if you would ask Rav Eliezer Waldenberg, who says that a fetus is just part of the mother, I don't know if you could violate Shabbos for it. Maybe yes, maybe no. If you'd ask Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, who says that the fetus is alive and the mitzvah of pikuach nefesh, the mitzvah of saving a life, of v'chai bahem, that they should live, applies to a fetus who isn't born, he'd say, I think he would say yes. I think he would say yes, you could, you should. You should violate Shabbos to save a fetus. To treat a fetus. You should. V'chai bahem. You have to keep the fetus alive. Says Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, if we were to think of the rules of pikuach nefesh, the rules of danger, and we'd come to this situation, this pregnant woman who's trying to give birth, and the baby's thrashing about, and now her life is in danger because the baby's moving this way, it's endangering her. If this baby is not a rodef, if this baby is not a pursuer, if this is just a situation of her life being in danger, if this is just a question of the laws of pikuach nefesh, just a question of the applicability of the verse v'chai bahem, then we could not kill the baby to save the mother. Because there is as important a value of v'chai bahem for the fetus who isn't yet born. That's why the Rambam has to say no. The fetus is endangering the mother, is halachically defined as rodef. Halachically, it's defined as a pursuer. It's not just a situation of danger to life to the mother. No, this is a situation of pursuit. Someone pursuing someone else. Someone pursuing someone else is a new category of law. It's not the category of law of hatzalat nefashot, of v'chai bahem. It's a category of law of different verses, the verses of Shofech Dam Adam Ba'adam Damu Yishafech, the verses of Ababa Machteres. It's a different category of law. Now, in this category of law too, in this category of law as well, how could one kill the fetus who's pursuing the mother? True, you have an obligation to save the mother because she's being pursued, but how could you kill the fetus? The fetus is also a life. So no, in this category of law, we look at full life and half lives. A fetus is alive, but not 100% alive. The mother, though, is 100% alive. Since the mother is 100% alive, that's why the Rambam says you could kill the fetus to save the mother. But if there's no danger to the mother, there's no danger to the mother, then there would be a danger, say, to a fetus, then there's a mitzvah of pikuach nefesh, a mitzvah of atzalat nefashot, to save the fetus. The mitzvah of atzalat nefashot applies also to a 75% life. That's Rav Chaim's idea. But since here the situation is classified as a situation of pursuit, then halacha says, since the fetus is not fully alive, kill the fetus and save the mother. But if the fetus is fully alive, if the fetus is born, at that point one cannot kill the fetus. Why? Because in the situation, the child born. Adds Rav Chaim another point. He says, the only reason, right? It's a little complicated. When there's a situation of pursuit, a pursuer running after the pursued, so there is an obligation from the rules of pursuit to save the pursued. But then you might say, how could I save the pursued? I'm killing the pursuer. How can I save one life? I'm ending another life. So the answer to that is the pursuer is not guiltless. The pursuer is pursuing. So because he is to some degree guilty and to some degree deserving of a punishment, and so we don't say that killing him is no better than letting the other guy get killed. We say, no, I should kill him because he's deserving of a punishment. But that only applies to a pursuit where he's to some degree guilty. A baby being born, this is nature doing it. God is doing it to the mother. God is causing the baby to put the mother in danger. The baby is guiltless. The only way to kill the baby is before it's fully born. It's only a 75% life. Since it's only a 75% life, from the rules of pursuer and pursued, you can say, to save the pursued, I can take away a 75% life, as horrible as that is. But from the rules of saving lives, you wouldn't say that. From the rules of saving lives, you say there's an as equal obligation to save the life of a 75% life. But since we're dealing with the rules of pursuer and pursued, that's why we can say that a 75% life is to be pushed away in the presence of a 100% life. That's what Rav Chaim Soloveitchik said. That's his whole calculus to explain this Rambam. So what emerges is that in a situation where you have the baby endangering the life of the mother, so here you have a situation of guiltless pursuit. It's pursuit, but it's guiltless pursuit. And in this case, one is to save the life of the mother by killing the baby. That's the halacha. But it's a halacha of saving the life of the mother. It still could be that the death of the baby to some degree is a killing. If we take this type of a perspective, right? If you wouldn't have Rav Chaim's analysis, you would say that no, right? If the way we were first reading it, the way Dr. Belazon was first saying it, if you have a pregnant mother and the baby is endangering the life of the mother through the pregnancy, through the way it's moving about, it's endangering the mother, and we call the baby a regular rodef, a regular pursuer, so then we would say it's a regular pursuer. It's no problem in killing it. It's a regular pursuer. But the way Rav Chaim is adding to the subtlety of our definition, it's not a regular pursuer. It's a guiltless pursuit. Now, to save the mother, it gets killed. But when we kill it, it's not as if we're killing the guilty. We're not killing a regular rodef. We're killing a guiltless rodef. So then one might also extend that a step further. It's questionable. And say, in the situation where Esav put his gun to the 400 men and said, you go out and kill Yaakov. And they feel forced to do it because they're afraid to get killed otherwise. So true, Yaakov can kill them. But maybe the fact that they're under danger and under such duress to some degree is a mitigating factor, to put it into the category of what we have been calling the guiltless pursuit, that yes, you're allowed to kill, but the killing is still killing, in the sense that it makes a mark on the soul, and Yaakov doesn't want to put that mark on his soul. Maybe, just as a suggestion. To summarize what we learned, we just basically discussed one line in Rashi, 3-4 words. Rashi says that Yaakov was terrified. Even more than he was afraid of getting killed, was terrified of killing. The question is, what's he afraid of killing? The people coming to kill him are pursuers, and he's within his rights to go ahead and kill them. So some say, well, he's afraid that he might kill Esav. His father would get upset. It doesn't say that. Rashi doesn't say that. So he's afraid he might kill the others. Why is he afraid he might kill them? They shouldn't be coming after him. They're pursuers. Well, maybe they were under duress. They were under duress, but they should have said no. Maybe, yes, they should have said no. But maybe even so, maybe because they're under duress, they're somewhat like the category that Rav Chaim has of a fetus. Rav Chaim says a fetus is a life. But even as a life, it can be a pursuer. And one can kill the fetus to save the life of the mother before the fetus is born. But that's a guiltless pursuit. It's a different type of pursuit. Maybe here too. Maybe. A situation where people are under such duress, and that's why they're killing. That's why they're going to war. Maybe that's to some degree like akin, similar to this guiltless pursuit. They can't control themselves. They're forced to some degree. And while Yaakov is allowed to save himself by killing them, he doesn't have to let himself get killed. But nevertheless, maybe the killing of them is an act of permissible murder, but it's to some degree murder. It makes a mark on the soul. It corrupts the soul. Then read in the whole section of the battle, the encounter of Yaakov and Esav, the encounter that Yaakov had with the angel of Esav. And we always remember this whole story of Yaakov's fears and his battles with Esav, with the mitzvah of not eating giranasha, not eating that nerve that the angel touched on Yaakov's thigh. A very beautiful piece of the Sefer HaChinuch that I photocopied at the end of the packet, where the Sefer HaChinuch says, the reason why we have the mitzvah of giranasha is to teach us that there'll be a Mashiach. Because that's really the whole story of Jewish history. We're put into all sorts of situations that are pretty horrible situations. Soldiers have to go, and they have to fight, and they have to battle. And we're attacked, and they're terrorists. All sorts of situations that are horrible. We battle with angels. But in the end, we beat the angel of Esav. In the end, we survive. Even if we're wounded, we survive. So we eat the giranasha to remind us that we will survive, that we will overcome. We don't eat the giranasha to remind us that we will survive, we will overcome, and there will be a coming of Mashiach, hopefully, the Meher B'Yameinu. Is there a question, Paul?
Yeah, I think the formulation is very beautiful. The only problem I have with it is I think it fights the Rambam's terminology of the Rodei. I'd rather see it almost as a pikuach nefesh, but one pikuach nefesh is stronger than the other because it's not 100% life.
Yeah.
They have 100% versus 75%. Once it shows its head, then it's a life. 100% equals 100%.
Right.
You can't take it. And that also, maybe you could extend that formulation even to Shari Tzedek Hospital. Mm-hmm. Whereby it's not 100% life. And it's not. It's a life. There's going to be life. It will one day realize 100% life. But there are circumstances where one could argue that there's going to be so much anguish and pain, perhaps death for the mother, perhaps death for the fetus, that you can take the life. I have trouble with the Rambam's Rodei.
The Rambam says it's a Rodei.
What I'm telling you is implicit in Rodei is a purposeful action.
Oh, that's what he's telling us. Not like that.
And this is exactly not a purposeful
action. No, it's natural.
It's the furthest thing you can
be.
So for me to say it's a different type of Rodei, is saying, well, what is a Rodei? Either it's a Rodei or it's not a Rodei.
Well, that's what the Rambam is, according to Rav Chaim, that's what he's saying. Yeah. But I would wonder, if you were to say, that's what Rav Moshe Feinstein and others also argue, if we are to grant that a fetus is partial life, then we can't end life. Morally, how could we end life? Mm-hmm. Even if it's going to be a very difficult life, how could we end it? If it's not alive, that's what Rav Waldenberg said. Rav Waldenberg argued it's not alive. Mm-hmm. It's just a part of the mother. But if it's alive, if it's its own independent life,
but that's it. We can't take away life. It's not independent yet.
Yeah, but if it's halachically, if halachically we define it as life, how could we end a life? If you halachically don't define it as life,
so what is a life that's less than 100%? What's the 75%?
75% life.
What does that mean?
75%. Not fully alive. You want to have another case where you would have 75% life? Possibly co-joined twins. That's what Rabbi Judah David Bleich has a very beautiful article about co-joined twins. In certain situations, again, I don't know any medicine, but there are situations where you have two twins and sharing certain basic organs, and one of them will not be able to survive the year, regardless of what you do. The other, if you just leave it as B, maybe will live for 1 or 2 years. But if you do a separation, that other one can live, who knows, for 40, 50 years. So that might be another situation where you have life, but that's not 100% life.
I mean, it's coming down to the whole question of triage.
What's that? Triage.
Yeah. You put a 90-year-old man on a respirator when you need it for a soldier that is...
That's very difficult. But I think in halacha we usually presume that... I don't know how we would deal with triage. We usually presume, you know, first come, first serve. They're both lives. You have to save whatever you can.
Nice to avoid it, but it's
right. It happens, right?
I'm not arguing for abortion, Mark. Okay? But when, once you get into qualifying the life as less than 100%,
right,
and then you can kill it before it shows, and then as it shows, it's 100%. To me, already you said that it's not a fully independent life. So if it's not a fully independent life, then where do you draw the line as to when you can kill it?
Yeah, so Rav Chaim Soloveitchik would say, and he felt, you can't kill it. The only time you can kill it is when you have a situation of rodef, where halacha classifies this non-100% life as a rodef. That's what he's saying.
What I'm saying is, why do you have to call it rodef? Just call it pikuach nefesh.
Because he claims that from pikuach nefesh, 75% life has as much of a need to be kept alive as 100% life. Uh-huh. That's what he claims.
He calls it rodef without the chiyuv of rodef.
Chiyuv rodef meaning the punishment, the penalty on the person of saying, you're a guilty person, you deserve to be killed, that you don't have for a baby who's not acting, is being acted upon by the natural process.
I mean, I don't see it any different than someone who kills the shogeg. Someone who kills the shogeg, it's not going to get the same punishment as someone who kills the mezid.
Yeah, you still have to be careful. Lives. Very careful about it. Try to avoid that as much as possible. And someone who does, we to some degree, is penalized. He has to run away to the city of refuge and escape from the redeemer of the blood. Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying it would be the same punishment, but it's punishable, actionable.